Hey, everybody, welcome back for another deep dive. Today, we're tackling the book of Hosea.
Ooh, Hosea.
Yeah. Specifically, a lecture by Dr. Gary Yates. He really digs deep on this wild story of Hosea's marriage to this woman, Gomer.
Yeah, Gomer.
Yeah. And the way their relationship kind of becomes this powerful metaphor for God's relationship with Israel. You know, like, it's the Old Testament, turbulent times, prophets, the whole shebang.
Right, right. When you think about Hosea, he's part of that book of the 12, you know, those prophets.
Right.
And their message is, like, super urgent. Like, Israel, you're messing up big time.
Yeah.
There will be consequences. But Hosea, he stands out. He's just so, so intensely personal.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, right off the bat, God tells him, go marry this wife of whoredom.
Oh.
He's like, you know what I mean?
Heavy stuff.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, was this a real marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it some kind of, like, vision?
Yeah. And what does that even mean, wife of whoredom? Like, how do we even interpret that?
Right. It's a head-scratcher.
Big time. Scholars have been debating this for, like, forever.
Yeah.
Some say, oh, it was just a spiritual vision.
Right. Like, Gomer represents Israel's spiritual idolatry.
Exactly. Others say, no, it was an allegory. Or it was a parable.
Right. Not meant to be taken literally.
Right. But Dr. Yates, he makes a convincing case that it was an actual marriage.
I can see that.
Yeah.
It definitely adds to the drama.
Yeah.
You know, seeing Hosea living out this painful experience so publicly.
Yeah.
But wouldn't that be, like, incredibly controversial?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, priests weren't even allowed to marry divorced women.
Totally.
Let alone, like, someone known for well.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And you have those rules in Leviticus, you know, chapter 21, verse 7.
Yeah.
Priests can't marry just anybody. And then God tells Hosea to do something that totally seems to, like, contradict that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It would have been like, whoa.
Yeah. So Dr. Yates thinks that's, like, the point.
Yeah. He argues that, like, the contradiction, that's what gives the metaphor its power.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's like God saying, my love for you, it's so radical, so beyond your rules and expectations,
yeah,
that I'm going to do something that seems, like, unthinkable just to show you.
Exactly. And this whole idea of a prophet's life becoming part of the message, it's not just Hosea.
Yeah, that's true. Like Jeremiah.
Right. Jeremiah, he wasn't allowed to marry.
Right.
That was a sign of the coming destruction.
Right.
And Ezekiel, his wife, died on the day Jerusalem fell.
Oh, wow.
Symbolizing the nation's grief.
That's powerful.
It is.
So Hosea's marriage is like, what, like a performance?
Yeah, yeah. Like street theater.
Yeah.
A spectacle designed to, like, wake people up.
To the reality of what's going on.
Totally. It's a prophetic action, you know?
Yeah.
Meant to shake them out of their complacency.
Yeah. Make them face the music. But going back to this wife of whoredom.
Yeah.
It's still kind of vague, you know?
Yeah.
Like, was Gomer already unfaithful before they even got married? Or did she become unfaithful later?
That's a big debate.
Yeah.
Some scholars go for what they call the proleptic interpretation.
Proleptic.
It means Gomer was faithful at first, but then her infidelity, it, like, foreshadows Israel's future.
Okay. But Dr. Yates.
Dr. Yates, he thinks Gomer was already known for her whoredom when Hosea married her.
So that broken marriage, right from the start, it represents the state of Israel at that time.
Exactly. And he points to the fact that Israel's been straying from God for a long time.
Yeah, true.
The golden calf way back in Exodus.
Oh, yeah.
Ezekiel, he talks about their idol worship even back in Egypt.
Hmm.
Dr. Yates says this history of unfaithfulness shows that Gomer's initial state, it reflects that broken relationship.
Okay, like the honeymoon's over.
Long over.
Yeah.
We're talking about a nation that's been playing with fire for a while.
Right, right. And this all sets the stage for what happens next.
It does.
The consequence.
The consequence.
So what are they? What's coming down the pipeline? And how does it all fit into God's plan? Okay, so Israel is, like, way off track. And Hosea's marriage, it's this living, breathing example playing out right in front of them. So what happens next? What are the consequences Hosea is talking about?
Well, it's not good. God's going to bring judgment on Israel.
Yikes.
Stripping them bare, leaving them thirsty in the wilderness. Their crops will be destroyed. No more feasts.
Whoa. Like everything they depend on.
Gone. It's like all the blessings they took for granted just ripped away.
Intense. But you were saying these punishments, it's not just about revenge.
No, no. God's not just angry looking to lash out. Remember,
yeah.
Hosea's story, it's a love story.
Right, right.
Even if it's, you know, complicated. These punishments, yeah, they're harsh, but they're more like discipline, like a parent, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Tough love, but on a national scale.
Exactly. It's to get Israel's attention, you know? Shake them up, bring them back to a real relationship. But I know what you're thinking. If God's so loving, how does punishment fit in?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's hard to wrap your head around sometimes.
I know. Well, that's where chesed comes in. It's this Hebrew word, often translated as loving kindness or steadfast love. But it's even deeper.
Okay.
It's covenant loyalty, unwavering commitment. It sticks around even when the other person messes up. Think of it like a good marriage, you know? It can weather anything because it's based on something much deeper than just feelings.
That makes sense. So even when God's handing down these punishments, his chesed, that deep love, it never goes away.
Never. That's what makes this story so powerful. It's not just sin and punishment, you know, black and white. It's about God. He's both just unmerciful. He disciplines because he loves. He wants what's best.
Wow. So even when Israel's at their worst, God's working to bring them back. Okay, this is said. I see how it ties in. But what about those kids with the strange names?
Oh, yes. The names, they're like mini prophecies.
Oh, interesting.
Woven into the story. The first kid, Jezreel.
Jezreel.
Yeah. Well, Jezreel was a place known for this horrible massacre. King Jehu, you know.
Okay, so right away, the name's got this negative vibe.
Yeah. Violence, bloodshed, judgment. It's like foreshadowing.
The consequence.
Exactly. Yeah. Sin has consequences for everyone.
Right.
Then there's Lo Ruhama, the daughter.
Lo Ruhama.
It means not pitied, not loved.
Oof, that's a tough one. It sounds like I'm done. No more mercy.
It does, doesn't it? But remember, this story's about chesed. That unwavering love. It might seem hidden, but it's always working towards redemption.
Okay, so I'm guessing there's a twist.
There is. Lo Hami, their third child, a son. It means not my people. It's like the ultimate breakup, the covenant relationship severed. But then...
Oh, here we go.
Right.
Yeah.
Hosea chapter 2, God's still talking about judgment, but there's this hint of reconciliation, alluring Israel back, speaking tenderly. It's about restoring their relationship. And this promise, it includes the children, too.
Wait, so even those names, they get turned around?
They do. Lo Ruhama, she becomes Ruhama, pitied, loved. And Luami, he becomes Ami, my people. It's like their whole destiny. And Israel's, too, it gets flipped.
Wow, that's a big reversal. So even when it's darkest... God's has said that relentless love, it's still there, working to make things right. But I'm a little fuzzy on how the names fit with the punishments.
Ah, good question. Stripped bare, thirsty in the wilderness, crops destroyed, remember? Those are metaphors for the hardships, the suffering, consequences.
Not just random anger from God. It's connected to how they broke the covenant, how they turned away.
Exactly. And it's not just about paying for their sins either. God's goal is to change them, you know, not just punish. He's using these experiences, even the painful ones, to pull them back, help them see how empty their idols are, how deep his love is.
Like a parent disciplining a child. It's out of love.
Right. Wanting what's best. But there's something Dr. Yates said I'm not sure I get. He quoted Hosea 2.16, "You will call me my husband and no longer call me my Baal." What's that all about? Oh, that's important. Remember Baal?
Yeah.
That Canaanite god.
Oh, right. The one with the rituals?
Yeah. It was all about idolatry, worshiping false gods, total opposite of the covenant between God and Israel.
So God's saying cut it out with the Baal stuff.
Basically, it's about exclusive devotion. I'm the only true God, no others. And this relationship, it's not about rituals or sacrifices. It's about real love, faithfulness.
Back to basics. Ditch the distractions, the false promises, rediscover what matters. But does that mean Israel doesn't have a choice?
The free will question.
Yeah.
Big one. We could talk about that for hours. But here's the thing. God's not forcing them to love him.
Okay.
He's setting things up so they can come back. A real reconciliation based on love and trust. And that's where the new covenant comes in.
A new covenant. Okay, now I'm really interested. Tell me more about this new covenant. How does it connect to Hosea and Gomer?
Well, it's this promise, you see, that God's going to, like, totally change his people from the inside out. Ah. He doesn't want just going through the motions, you know, empty rituals.
Right, right.
He wants their hearts to be, like, completely in tune with his will.
That's a pretty big ask. How's that even possible?
That's the amazing part. He's going to write his law on their hearts, give them a new spirit, so they'll just, like, naturally want to love him and obey him.
Wow. It's not about rules anymore. It's about, like, a total change.
Right.
It reminds me of Jeremiah, you know, Jeremiah 31.33. God says, "I will put my law within them and I will write it on their hearts and I will be their God and they shall be my people."
Yes. Exactly, like this deep connection. God's will becomes their will, not because they're scared, but because they love him.
Powerful stuff. And you're saying this new covenant idea keeps popping up.
All over the prophets, it's like a sneak peek at God's big plan, you know?
Yeah.
To fix that broken relationship, not just by forgiving, but by, like, totally transforming us.
So Hosea and Gomer, with all the drama and pain, it ultimately points to this new covenant, this new way of being with God based on love and real change.
You got it. And this whole idea of a changed heart is not just some theory. It matters for how we live, you know?
Okay, but how does that apply to us today? We're not exactly ancient Israelites.
True, but the message still fits. We still stray. We chase our own balls.
Our own idols.
Exactly. Things that distract us from a real relationship with God.
Yeah, I think we've all been there.
Yeah. You know,
money, success, relationships, good causes even.
Yeah.
It's easy to let those things become more important than God.
So easy. That's why Hosea's story matters, you know? It reminds us that God's has said his love, it's always there. Even when we mess up, even when we wander, he keeps pulling us back, inviting us to experience that same kind of change, that change of heart that he promised Israel.
So it's not about checking off boxes or just doing religious stuff.
No, no.
It's about letting God work on our hearts. So we want to please him just naturally.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where the real freedom is, not doing whatever we want, but aligning our hearts with God's will and finding that deep joy that comes from a real relationship with him.
This has been, wow, a real eye-opener. I see Hosea in a whole new light.
It's a story that keeps talking to us, you know, across time. Makes us think about how deep God's love is, the consequences of what we choose, and the hope of being made new. Anyone can turn to him.
A message we need to hear. So as you go about your day, think about this. If God would go to all that trouble for Israel, a nation that kept rejecting him, what does that say about his love for us today? How is his love working in our lives right now, even when things are hard? Keep those questions in mind as you continue to explore this amazing story of grace and second chances.